welcome to episode 73 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesamchat.com. This is Eric Borzeski. Joining me this week is, actually, it's Alan Olson this week. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Hey, Eric. Doing pretty well. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Alan's in Minnesota, so he's suffering from a little pre-winter, the snow is about to hit the fan kind of depression. So we'll do our best to cheer him up.
I sure hope so.
Well, the American team did their best to cheer him up playing in the somewhat rainy, somewhat cold, somewhat windy Canada in Montreal this weekend. The Americans end up winning 19.5 to 14.5. Alan, your thoughts?
Oh, some great golf over the weekend. You saw the American team play like, it was just amazing. You would have thought that they would have, you know, rolled over like they had in prior Ryder Cups. The formats don't always work for them. U.S. maybe not always the best team golf. I don't know, they played awesome.
Yeah, and they've had better success, it should be noted, in the President's Cup than the Ryder Cup. You know, that was the focus of a lot of the things. You know, for example, in the Ryder Cup, the Americans tend to stink at foursomes, also called alternate shot. This year, they won 9.5 out of 10 points. Or sorry, 10.5 out of 11 points, right? They played 6 and then they had 5 matches. So 10.5 out of 11 points in alternate shot, including a 5-0 sweep and a 5.5 to 1.5 point route, basically.
I don't know what happened on this round, but I would keep this team for next year's Ryder Cup because the pairings worked great.
The pairings worked really well. We didn't see Tiger and Phil together. We did see Tiger paired with Jim Furyk in a pairing that did not work again. They played together in both the four ball or the best ball as well as the alternate shot or foursome thing. And I don't think those two gel in four ball or best ball competition because they're both kind of like, they're both par players, you know, if you want to put it that way. They both emphasize not making mistakes. They both emphasize, you know, strategic play, placing your ball around the golf course, and that doesn't lead to a lot of birdies.
No,
you know, two risk takers firing at every flag possible. That leads to a lot of doubles, but those don't matter so much in best ball. It also leads to a lot of birdies and eagles.
Yeah, I think Tiger's a tough guy to pair up with. It's worked with Furyk in the past, but I don't know. Maybe he needs to be paired with one of the rookies or somebody who's going to go for broke a little bit more often.
Right, Jim Furyk 3-2-0 in this year's Ryder Cup. He lost 2-1 to Goose, and we'll go over some of the golfers later on. But some of the pairings that worked really well, it's tough to include Phil Mickelson and Woody Austin since they seem to get a half a point all the time instead of actually winning. That worked out okay. On the first day, Tiger Woods played with
Charles Howell III, which was a little surprising.
A little surprising, especially it was the alternate shot format. They ended up winning pretty handily, but by the same token, they play a similar game. They hit it far, and they're kind of all over the place. Yeah, Tiger Woods, not so much all over the place lately, but certainly he's used to playing from the trees.
Yeah, absolutely.
Charles Howell put him there several times.
Some of those shots, you could just see Tiger. You just see the steam coming out of his ears. I got to bail him out again.
Yeah, but they're good friends, and so good to see them playing together. You know, you never saw Tiger Woods playing with Zach Johnson. You know, he did play with Jim Furyk, who's a shorter hitter, but not quite the same. It's still, you got to find that right mix, you know. Jack Nicklaus asked the U.S. team who they'd want to play with versus, you know, the Hal Sutton approach of tougher and new rope, you know. let's put the two guys out there and they should win, even though they really don't like each other.
Right.
So Paul Azinger may have something to learn here. Going down through some of the individuals who played, David Toms was the leading point earner at 4.5 points a year, and he went 4-0-1. This comes after earning only half a point in last year's Ryder Cup, so an impressive turnaround for David Toms.
And really, for a guy who really hasn't done anything this year except the only newsworthy items, he fired his longtime caddy.
Scott Verplank, kind of a stalwart, 4-0-4-0-0 this year. He was also 2-0 in the 2006 Ryder Cup, so really kind of an underappreciated, steady guy. Going 4-0-0, he sat out the Saturday afternoon matches, but mm-hmm. won everything else he played in.
Yeah, great guy. He's just a professional. He's a grinder, and he gets the job done on everything.
He wears you down in match play, and that came through, and he's a good putter. Both good qualities. Woody Austin won 1 and 3. He wins 2.5 points as a rookie, but kind of the spark plug. You know, he got a lot of credit for being the emotional guy. Spark plug nutcase, call it what you will.
Just throw Woody in the lake and you'll be fine.
Stuart Sink, 3-1-0. His one loss was not the 6-4 win, the drubbing of Nicol Hearn, who did not play Tiger Woods in the singles. Stuart Sink's clinched the cup on the 14th green, so not exactly, didn't come down to the end for it.
No, I mean, he basically just right out of the gate, was 6 birdies in a row, and that was all she wrote.
Stood out, yeah. Phil Mickelson, 2-1-2. including a 5-4 victory over Singh. Two of those ties were with Woody Austin, I believe, when they were down and made good comebacks to get a half a point.
Yeah, very good. Nice to see Phil play well. He doesn't always play well in the Ryder Cup or President Cup matches, and usually by this time of the year, he's not even playing golf, so good to see him play well.
That's right. I think that's one thing, too. The FedEx Cup playoffs kept him competitive because he did play them. So it kept him playing. You know, normally this time of year would come when he would be, like, not playing golf very much. So he's kind of out of the flow or out of he's not exactly out of practice, but, he's a little stale. So
right.
If anything, maybe the FedEx Cup helped with that. Tiger Woods 3-2-0, the same as Steve Stricker. Tiger's two losses again with Furyk in the four ball, and he lost to Mike Weir in a very un-Tiger-like way on Sunday, missing a short putt at the 17th and then dunking his ball in the water on 18 to lose a one-up lead with two to play.
Extremely surprising to see that happen, especially after battling back like he did.
So Steve Stricker, though, 3-2-0 also, but really had a steady all-around performance.
Yeah, very good. Nice to see the Wisconsin guy do very well. Had a great end of the year with the FedEx Cup, and it just carried over to the President's Cup.
Right. Is he going to win comeback player for the second year in a row? Can he do that?
Sure, why not?
We'll give it to him.
Give it to him. He gets our vote.
Yeah, Hunter Mahan, a rookie, 2-3-0. He lost 3-2 to Choi. But really, every time I looked up, the guy was making a 15-footer like Woody Austin to have a hole.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who's one of the future stars of the tour. And I don't know, with the way he hits the ball, he could end up being a potential guy you could almost think about pairing with Tiger Woods.
That's right. Jim Furyk, 3-2-0. He lost to Goosen. Otherwise played well. Lost also to Tiger Woods in the four ball again. But outside of that pairing, did fine winning the three other times he played. Lucas Glover quickly 2-3-0. He lost to Els in the singles. Zach Johnson 2-2-0, losing to Adam Scott. I think he was a little tired. He played a lot of the FedEx Cup stuff. He shot that 60. He took that week off, but I think he was kind of tired.
Yeah, he definitely played a lot of tournaments at the end of the year, and it showed.
Charles Howell III, 2-2-0, and he was the one I was perhaps most worried about because he was one of the few American players coming in not playing very good golf at all.
No, basically has been non-existent since about May.
Right, well, he went on a blitz birding 6 holes out of 7 to beat Stuart Appleby in Sunday's singles competition. So good round all around. Good to see Mike Weir of Canada, beat Tiger Woods. I'm sure that helped. But like we said in the predictions, too many of the international players were struggling to really put up a big, huge fight against the American team, which, again, was close to being stronger on paper. But
yeah, it was kind of odd to see, like you said, none of the international players were playing very well at the end of the year, with the exception of maybe KJ Choi was playing pretty good golf. But for the most part, yeah, a lot of them were struggling. A lot of the big guns, except for KJ Choi and Ernie Els.
Yeah, Vijay Singh was coming off either an injury or just a massive swing change or both. Mike Weir not playing great, kind of on the comeback trail. Ernie Els hasn't gotten it done much this year. KJ Choi should have been hot. Adam Scott's been okay. Nick O'Hearn, tough to say much there. Retief Goosen, really not playing great golf lately. Stuart Appleby comes and goes. Trevor Immelman, had the flu or something earlier this year and was out for months. I know, it's only recently started getting back. And Rory Sabatini has never been the same since calling out Tiger Woods.
That'll do that.
I almost wish Tiger Woods could have played Rory Sabatini and Mike Weir on Sunday.
That would have been great. That's quality TV.
Yeah, that would have been just have them both. Best ball against Tiger.
That's, for the most part, that's about the only way you're ever going to beat him.
And besides, the U.S. had such a large margin going into the day. Who cares if we lose 3 points right there?
That's about it. Did you feel that at all? The fact that the U.S. was up by so many, that kind of Sunday was like, eh.
It was boring, and Johnny Miller and Dan Hicks and them tried as much as they could to talk up the international team and to create some kind of suspense, but, it just wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, the odds of them winning, 10 of 12?
Yeah, there were still 6 courses on the match, and I think the U.S. had clinched it, so, it's like...
Yeah, what do? Cut the football.
Yeah, watch football, there we go. We will cut to commercial, and we will be right back after this, so stay tuned.
7 years ago in Las Vegas, Nevada, the Titleist Pro V1 made its professional debut.
I won with it the first time I put it in play.
It was an instant phenomenon. Number one on every worldwide professional tour. Number one with PGA professionals, with collegiate players, top amateurs, men, women, and juniors.
Seems like everybody plays a Pro V1.
The Pro V1 became the uncontested standard of performance. And best-selling ball and golf shops everywhere.
It's my number one seller, by far.
Nothing else comes close.
Now there's an all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
I won with first time I put it in play.
Pro V1X does what I want it to do.
The Pro V1X gives me better distance control.
I love the new alignment line.
It gives me more confidence.
The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Better than ever.
And welcome back. Big news made 2 weeks ago. PGA Tour is getting on board with drug testing. The golf organizations of the world, including, of course, the PGA Tour, have adopted an anti-doping policy. Many of the banned substances are similar to the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour's list, which range from anabolic steroids to hormones to narcotics and beta blockers. PGA Tour spokesman Ty Votoff, formerly of the LPGA Tour, said that HGH is on the banned list. Of course, HGH is, you know, human growth hormone. It's often prescribed to older men, say 40 or 50, to help slow down some aging processes. And there are really no tests to detect HGH. So it'll be interesting to see how they enforce that.
But nice to see it's on the list.
It's on the list, and, you know, it depends. I mean, even if there were no tests, if there were no tests for some of these things, okay, put yourself in this position, Al. If you know there are no tests and you have a, you know, you hire Barry Bonds' chemist and he tells you there are no tests, but, you know, here, take this stuff. It'll make you play golf better. It's still cheating. And you know that. So I think that comes into play. So even if there are no known tests for HGH, the fear of being caught, because in golf, being called a cheater is whatever. Bill Belichick cheats at football, and people are like, oh, he's a cheater. That slightly tarnishes their whatever. But he's still the coach. He got a little fine, and he's still the coach. In golf, he'd pretty much be done. I mean, people talk about Vijay Singh cheating 20 years ago, and it's on, you know, the Australasian tour in some event nobody's heard of. People still talk about it. We remember Colin Montgomery possibly cheating in the bunker, finishing high enough in Singapore to get into the top 50, which gets him into the Masters and some other things. So we still remember these things. We know Gary Player pushed down grass, maybe, and Tom Watson called him out in a skins game.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that those are all great points. And I think golf is, you know, the one sport where any even hint of cheating can really ruin a player's reputation, like you said, 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
And that's the thing. That's where I disagree with a lot of the players. They will say, hey, golf is a game of honor and all that. And so nobody, I don't think, does drugs. That's beside the point, I think. I think the point here is what we've been saying all along on the show is prove it to the public. If you're clean, you have nothing to lose by proving it.
Right,
and
absolutely.
That's the point, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's not like it's going to take a lot to implement the testing policy to say we're going to do it random or however we're going to do it. Hey, you got the number one golfer in the world and the guy who basically is the golden goose tiger saying, we got to do it.
And he's saying, test me first. I'll take a test anytime you want. I saw the comment made, if Tiger's tests are negative, which I certainly would, what's the point in testing at anyone else?
Exactly, because nobody else on tour looks like Tiger.
Well, no one else on tour wins like Tiger either, so, I mean, you know.
No.
It's like, if he's not doing drugs, who cares if everybody else is? They're still not beating him.
Exactly.
Fincham estimates it could cost the tour $1.5 million a year. Given that they spent, like, 10 times that or more advertising the FedEx Cup, that's a penny in the, you know what I mean?
I don't think the PGA Tour is going to be hurting for cash or taking out loans to pay that.
$1.5 million. $1,000 per golfer per test, supposedly, so it's really not a whole lot. They could take up collections in the galleries if they really need it. Weigh in with your thoughts on this. It'd be interesting to see what people think of the testing policy and to see how it goes into effect sometime next year. Note here from Doug Ferguson, the AP golf writer and a good guy. If you watch television broadcasts, he's always the guy in Hawaiian shirt. But anyway, he says if FedEx Cup fixes or tweaks are in store, not to look for much. He says that despite some glaring holes, basically, or some glaring problems with the FedEx Cup playoffs we saw this year, it's not going to change a whole lot next year. There'll be subtle tweaks, basically.
So I'm not sure which of the major, you know, he listed out a few of the major things that people perceive as flaws. Other really than scheduling, I thought the FedEx Cup, you know, it went pretty good. All the golfers played. They played almost all the time, and it was meaningful golf in the fall. I mean, what more?
Yeah, here are the things. Make everyone play all four events. You know, I disagree with that. I think unless you want to standardize and allow the top-seeded players to take the first week off if they wish, you know, I don't believe in making everyone play all four events. If you make everyone play all four events, it's just more likely Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are going to skip all four.
Exactly.
start with fewer players. That one I agree with. I think if you're going to have a playoffs, have a playoffs. Go from 100 the first week to 80 to 60 to 30 or something, you know, something like that. Start with less. Make it a playoffs.
Yeah, make it
more like a playoffs where, you know, you take less than the regular season.
Right. Yep. I mean, you have to make it kind of an honor, if you will, to be able to make it to this, to that level.
And the third one here is more volatility in the standings. I don't necessarily agree with this. You know, if Tiger Woods has a big lead through the regular season, I think it would have been stupid for even Steve Stricker to have passed him with, say, two wins in the playoffs. Tiger Woods had five before that, and Steve Stricker had none.
Right. Yeah, so, absolutely.
I think that's kind of silly. You know, it makes it more like a playoffs. But come on, and this isn't real playoffs. So, you know, you have to kind of eliminate the whole mentality of, you know, if you win during the playoffs, that counts for more. I think that's kind of dumb. It does count for a little more because the points are doubled. But it can't count for so much more that you can come from 70th and win the whole thing, you know?
Right. Well, there's a reason why you're in the top, you know, top five or top 10 for the seeding. You had a good regular season.
Next up is an article that's no longer there. It talks about whether, we'll be brief with this one because we can't link to it. It was at USA Today. It talks about how Tiger Woods may not yet be at his peak. Do you think he's there? Going back over his last 22 tournaments, he's won 13 of them, 59% of them. And that also includes several second place finishes. So it takes him to like 16 or 17 out of 22 top two finishes. So is Tiger Woods at his peak, or is there still room to grow?
I think there's probably, well, in his eyes, he's always going to think there's room to grow. I mean, are we going to see another two swing changes because he feels he needs to tweak something? He's still, you know, not super accurate with the driver.
Yeah.
Yet he still beats on everybody, so.
When you look at the courses that are being played for majors in the next couple of years, Pebble Beach and St. Andrews in 2010, Torrey Pines next year for U.S. Open, Bethpage for U.S. Open in 2009, I think it's very much within the realm of possibility that two things will happen. One, Woods will surpass Nicklaus by 2010, by the end of the 2010 season. He may have 19 or 18 majors before he even gets to St. Andrews, and may make the St. Andrews one number 19. And two, that he could win a Grand Slam, the calendar year Grand Slam.
That's about the only thing he's got left to do besides break Jack's record and with him. With the way he's playing right now, or the way he could even get even just a little bit better. Yeah, it does not bode well for the rest of the tour.
Funny article here from Tiger Woods, from The Onion. It says, following his dominating performance at this year's Tour Championship, in which he not only ran free of the field with an overpowering eight-shot victory, but also took home the first ever FedEx Cup, 13-time major winner Tiger Woods told reporters Sunday that he is looking to participate in a more competitive golf tour during the 2008 season. So Tiger Woods is leaving the PGA Tour. He's going to start his own golf tour, and it's going to be more competitive. Kind of funny because it's grounded in some truth. Because it could happen. You know, Tiger Woods is not always entirely happy with the way the PGA Tour is set up. But it would take a lot for that to happen. But it's a satirical article, so don't think for a second we're being serious about this particular thing. Finally here, we talked about Rory Sabatini's mouth earlier. This is just a quick article here where you can see some of Rory's top quotes from 2007. It does not include some from the President's Cup, but some of the good ones. What do you think?
I think the biggest one where he says that he's as beatable as ever. I think we should have, pulled that quote off the President's Cup, pair Rory and Mike Weir against Tiger and see what happens.
Earlier in the year, he was voted the least likely player to, or the player 25%, the majority in this poll, were least wanted to play with Rory Sabatini. So he said 25% of the guys on tour say the player they wouldn't want to play with is me. There's probably 25% I wouldn't want to play golf with. They're probably the same 25%. Especially if you found out, right? He says, you can pick your battles, but I'm not out here to make friends. I'm out here to win golf tournaments.
Which doesn't happen very often. You would think the guys would want to play with Rory, because you play with Rory, you're going to get done in like 4 hours.
And you'll probably beat him.
Exactly.
That's not fair.
No. The guy wins once in a while.
Once every few years. He wins something in, you know, limited field events where very few other people are playing, like this year.
Yeah.
Rory, if you're listening, we're as talkative as ever. So
absolutely.
There. We're as opinionated as ever.
Absolutely. I've seen Tiger when he figures it out. It's scary. I don't want to see that anymore. I like the new Tiger. I'm waiting for him to have kids to really test his patience. Who is this guy?
What kind of tear did he go on after he had kids? That's what's funny. I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm fine with having confidence. And I said this about Woody Austin, too. I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with speaking your mind. But don't come off like a crazy person.
No.
Don't come off and say, oh, he's as beatable as ever. He won 7 tournaments in a row during part of the year. He just beat you in a tournament by 5 shots in the final round when you had the lead going in, and on and on and on. You know what I mean? Just don't be stupid, okay? Speak your mind. Be confident. That's fine. Don't be stupid. This public service announcement has been brought to you by
thefantrap.com.
That's right. Don't be stupid.
Don't be stupid. If you're going to talk, back it up.
You can buy a Don't Be Stupid shirt. I have no idea what these people are, but don'tbestupid.com.
Perfect.
That about does it for episode 73 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thefantrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski for Alan Olson.
So long. Jason.